Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It does come to you from the land-grant university here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. It's the 22nd day of April, Earth Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's from Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. We'll explore avian flu just a bit more with the farm manager of the poultry facilities on this campus. And we'll take up the weather forecast, too, that with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Remember, you can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Checking now the numbers from Chicago as they finished up. And the nearby May corn down a half cent at $3.72.5 for the day. July at $3.79.5. That was a half lower. In September at $3.87.5, down a quarter. December contract was unchanged in the corn pit at $3.97.5. And the March at $4.07.75. It also finished the day unchanged. May soybean futures were down 4¾ of a cent at $9.70.5. July at $9.71¾, and nickel lower. August at $9.68¼, down 5½, and September at $9.57¼, finished 4¾ of a cent lower. November beans at $9.53¾, down 3 for the day. Next year's January at $9.60¼, down 3 cents. Bean meal down 30 at $3.15.50 in the May. Bean oil at $31.56, down 26 cents for the afternoon. Soft red winter wheat in the July, down a penny and a quarter, $4.99, the final trade and settlement price there. And the hard red Kansas City at $5.17¼, down a penny and three quarters for the day. Live cattle futures from Chicago finished at $156.40. In the April contract, the dime higher. June were down 40 cents at $146.32½. The feeder cattle in the lead option April at $213.40 per 100 pounds were up 75 cents for the day. The May contract at $207.52½. 55 cents higher on the afternoon. And the lean hogs from Chicago. May futures $70.27½, down $1.32½. June off $1.70 at $75.90. This is Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Let's check the outside markets at this hour. June crude oil at $56.22 a barrel, down 39 cents for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.87¼ is a penny and 0.9 cents higher. Gasoline on the RBOB or wholesale price at $1.92½. That's up 3¾ cents. And the natural gas at $2.60¼ is 3¾ cents higher at this hour. Ethanol futures from Chicago finished at $1.62¼, a penny and 0.4 cents lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 65 points higher at 17,948. The gold around $17 lower, $1,186 or thereabouts the final trade. And the dollar index at 98.140 is down 0.065 for the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area says we'll get to 50 degrees this afternoon and we'll drop off. And we have done that. And then it'll be sunny for the day. Areas of frost this evening under clear skies. That frost to come around 5 a.m. In the morning tomorrow with a low of 32. It'll be breezy on a west wind at 16 to 21 miles an hour, gusting to 30. And then Thursday, areas of frost before 8 a.m., of course. Otherwise sunny, a high of 60 degrees. Thursday night, patchy frost after 3 a.m. in the morning. Otherwise clear and a low of 33. West winds at 5 to 10. They'll become light out of the west after midnight. And then Friday, patchy frost after 8 a.m., otherwise mostly sunny, a high of 61 degrees. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. It is the 22nd day of April. It's Earth Day. On the phone line with us is Jackie Vakes from Stewart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Jackie, thanks for taking the time with us today. Let's start with bird flu, avian flu again this afternoon. What do we know about its impact and how it's been moving through the trade at this point?
Well, I think it's interesting, you could tell that there was impact last night when they were talking about it because of the fact that we saw 72,000 contracts of corn traded actually in the overnight, 30,000 in both May and July. And so I would venture to say that that probably was related to all the talk that's going on about avian bird flu. When you look at the big picture, okay, 3.5 million birds in Iowa is about 1.2% of all their layers. They have about 291 million layers there. So it's not a huge impact there, but they are, you know, poultry is the number one consumer of corn in the U.S., and I think a lot of people don't realize that. Somewhere between 1.7 and 1.9 billion bushels every year actually go into the broilers, the layers, the fryers, and the turkeys themselves. And so the far-reaching economic impact is big. The bigger thing today that happened was, you know, Mexico came in this morning and said that they were banning any imports of eggs from Iowa and chickens. And, you know, Mexico is our largest consumer of poultry. That is concerning. Although it was really good, they only did it regionally. You know, they didn't come in and say from the U.S. because we have 30 countries that have banned egg and poultry imports from the U.S. Since the beginning of April. And so, when it comes to Iowa, those birds consume about 12.8 to 13.3 million bushels per year of corn. And we just did have another case confirmed in Wisconsin, so it's around. We're hearing from our guys out there, you know, that anybody who has chickens anywhere in Iowa is shooting any bird they see, you know, because birds are terrible carriers of this type of thing. And so I think it's going to take warmer weather, just like any other flu, before we're going to start to see it back off. But who knows how long that might be and what kind of impact it could have overall, because, you know, in Iowa alone, it's 8,000 jobs, about $2 billion a year in their economy. And 19.3 million in taxes, which, you know, your politicians are going to be more concerned about. So I think this is a great opportunity, even though it's a terrible situation, to be able to say that poultry industry provides about $45 billion in income to the United States, and this was as of 2013. So it isn't a small segment like a lot of people think. You know, we just don't hear much about it, primarily because the corn that's grown for them is consumed where they are. In most cases. And so everybody likes to talk about cattle and about hogs, but poultry are extremely important to us.
Right. So at this point, it's the fact of the matter is the impact, it could be negligible based on the number of birds that have been infected. That could get much larger if the infection gets much larger. But the broader problem, and maybe longer term scope, is the fact that the export market is shutting down. And that will constrain the ability of producers of poultry in the United States to raise as many birds as they have in the past or could over time, right?
Right. And, you know, there is a certain period that when they get rid of these birds, that they have to keep the area open, too. I don't know exactly what the amount of time is. One of my producers told me, but I can't quote it. I think the bigger thing is, you know, what's the impact in terms of bushels of corn that might be available to the market that wouldn't have been available otherwise? Man. And, you know, at this point in time, it doesn't appear that that's a huge number in any way, shape or form. But at the same time, I think we have to recognize, you know, that it's the implication is what it is. It's always the implication. It's, you know, it's perception. You know, you and I talk so many times about that. It's the perception of what is going to happen and what's not going to happen. So hopefully we can nip this in the bud.
All right. Turn your attention to other market movers. Greece is still in the news.
Oh, my Lord. You know, you just wish they would slip away is basically what it is, you know. I'm getting real tired of them. You know, they're calling for another, they're talking about kicking out the new guy, you know, the new election that they just had, and because he's not giving them what they want, you know, because he ran on the austerity, anti-austerity thing, and now he's realizing that, whoa, you know, there's more of an issue here than we thought. So, you know, the question keeps coming back, will they default? Will they exit the euro? Will they get an extension? This morning there was a rumor there might be a six-month extension. And suddenly everybody got all excited, you know, and so, but Europe has a lot of issues. You know, Greece is running out of money. By the end of the month, I would expect that the money's gone, and I'm not sure anybody's giving them anymore. But when you look at the bigger picture, this morning, some of the headlines in the Wall Street Journal, Tesco, which is a British multinational grocery and retail store, posted a 6.4 billion euro loss, annual loss, which is equivalent to 9.63 billion in U.S. dollars. That is significant, but they have an even bigger problem. And I think we can identify with this to a point because Europe has just immigrants flooding into the country. And, you know, you've got these guys who are running boats. We just heard about these people who died on this boat that were trying to come into the country. They're paying these traffickers to get them out of the war and poverty areas, and then they're coming into places like Italy. They've just been flooding Italy, you know, and it's a really tough thing because, you know, from a humanitarian standpoint, you want to say, we'll take them in, we'll take care of them, we'll do this. But when you just have hundreds of thousands of people that are trying to get away from somewhere else and get to a better place, you know, economically, you have to figure out how you're going to handle that. And is there a good answer to it? You know, they've tried a few things. They're talking now about destroying the traffickers' boats, actually, you know, finding them and destroying them to try and stop this, because so many people are losing their lives besides just in trying to come across. And so Europe has got a tough row to hoe. And, you know, Greece is just a huge thorn in its side. But this bigger problem of immigrants coming, you know, out of other countries is something can't be solved overnight, that's for sure.
And let's come back to the marketplace at home. There was news in the market, and this is another livestock issue, but a small one, relatively speaking, although Chipotle itself as a restaurant chain, I think, is $2 billion or better per year. But they didn't make their sales estimate this last quarter.
No, they didn't. And, you know, there was a lot of speculation ahead of time that they weren't going to. But, you know, they said it's because of the price hike. But more than that, it was because of a shortage of pork. They couldn't get the pork. So, they, you know, their most popular offerings were not available. They were running out all the time. And so hopefully, you know, they'll have a better opportunity as we move forward here. But, you know, it's kind of interesting when you look at the economy and you look at how interrelated everything is. I think sometimes people who live in the city have absolutely no concept of what it means, you know, if there's something going on out in the country where their food is produced. You know, they just think it's always going to be there. And Chipotle is a good example. You know, people think they're going to go into fast food and get what they want. And it doesn't always work that way. We did have some good news on the economy today. Existing home sales were up 6.1% in March. That is the highest in the last 18 months. And the guesses were only a little over 5%. So February was 4.8. But, you know, this is really closely watched indicator. It would indicate, unless we start to see a lot more housing starts, that house prices are likely to rise. You know, which puts some pressure, of course, on the economy and on inflation. At the other side of the coin, Harley Davidson, and I know I've been one of the big people who keep talking about the dollar, but I'm not going to stop talking about the dollar because it does have an impact eventually. And, you know, Harley Davidson came out today and said, due to the higher dollar, their bikes right now are 30% above the price of European and Asian competitors. And, you know, Ford, GM, Chrysler, Caterpillar, anybody who ships over there is sitting in that same boat. So it does have an impact back here eventually. You know, they don't believe they're going to meet any of their profit expectations. And I think that's where I come back to my farmer and I just say, you know, my livestock guys couldn't be happier because corn prices are lower. I mean, you know, and they'd love to see prices go a lot lower, where the producer is not in that same game. And at the moment, we've been able to hang on. We'll see what exports say again tomorrow. But this dollar will impact us at some point in time, unless unless the economy actually trips and falls down. And if it does, that's not good for us either, but that would lower the dollar. But that's one of the few things I would see with the way Europe is acting. I think the dollar is going to remain strong for a long time to come.
Hey, a couple of other items. I love the fact that we can talk about almost anything because it always involves agriculture in some form. When this happened in 2010, we discussed it a whole lot. What was referred to as the flash crash, the Dow dropped 600 points in, what, 5 minutes or something like that?
5 minutes.
And that was what? Well, that would have been 2010 in, I think, the month of May. So it wasn't.
I think it was.
Yeah. So anyway, they apparently found the guy that might be responsible.
They did. It's kind of interesting because he's a UK trader. He's a day trader, of course. And he showed up in court in a yellow sweatshirt and sweatpants. So you can tell he's not used to going out in the daytime, I guess, you know. But they're accusing him of wire fraud, of commodity manipulation, and, you know, that they're saying that his lightning fast software manipulated that E-mini S&P, which caused the Dow to drop that 600 points in 5 minutes. What I thought was interesting in the story, though, was that when he appeared in the London court, they asked him if he wanted to be extradited, and he said no. And so I'm anxiously going to wait to see what the outcome is on this, because I thought we had an extradition policy with Europe and that there wasn't going to be an opportunity for someone like him to say no. So we'll find out. You know, the U.S. is going to try its hardest to get him back. But it's a good example of how things can be impacted. And I'm certainly not saying that that the software trading that goes on today is all bad, because it's not. A lot of times it gives us opportunity when we wouldn't have it. But this will be interesting to see if they can actually get him over here to prosecute him.
Two more items, cattle on feed and crude oil stocks.
Yep, cattle on feed, you know, the expectation for on feed is at 98.6%, placements 94.5, marketing's 98.2. You know, the marketing numbers is certainly not, we'd like to see it be at least 100%, but it's not going to be. And we know that because we've seen, you know, lower prices. There's no question about it. But, you know, the market itself is trying to posture, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, the cattle market at the moment is much more of a money flow market than it is necessarily a true reflection of what's going on in the cash market. I mean, you look at feeder cattle, cash index is 216, futures are 212. You look at the live cattle, and at this point in time, you know, we've got a $10 disparity between April and June, which is kind of strange because June is considered to be major grilling month, but at the same time, you know, it doesn't reflect what's going on in cash. And so it's a tough one. There's a lot of guys who have high break-evens. There's no question about that. And we'll see once how it works out. But the expectation is that we're going to place less cattle. There's no question about that. And so that keeps beef prices higher. Pork prices, on the other hand, should probably suffer, especially starting in June when a lot of those new barns come on and we see a whole lot more pork on the market. And when you go to crude was interesting today. We had the 13th straight week of a build in stocks on crude oil, up 5.3 million barrels, and 2.8 was the gas. So it really blew that away. At the same time, we had gas and heating oil stocks down, and that, you know, that's an indication we're starting the driving season here, and of course we're in the planting season, so you would expect that both would be down from that standpoint. But very very interesting things. All impacting us.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for taking so much time with us today, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it much.
Jackie Vakes from Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Earlier in the day, I spoke with Chet Utterback. He is the Poultry Research Farm Manager from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus to talk a little bit about the bird flu or the avian influenza outbreak that has happened in other states across the U.S. and its potential impact. Thanks, Chet, for being with us. First, could you tell me a little bit about avian influenza and just exactly what it might be?
Avian influenza is a virus that has been around for thousands of years. There is low pathogenic avian influenza and high pathogenic avian influenza. For years, we've experienced low path outbreaks in commercial turkey flocks, especially in Minnesota where the Mississippi fly zone is, fly zone for migratory birds. And the virus was able to mutate into H5N2, which is highly pathogenic. And with the low pathogenic, you may lose a few birds, but more than likely not. The hens will go out of production, or turkeys don't grow as well, or broiler chickens don't grow as well. Whereas with the high path, not only do you see a high death loss, but you see a high morbidity rate. And if your flock tests positive, the United States government, the USDA, is going to come in and they pay you X number of dollars per bird, whether they're laying hens, whether they're turkeys, or whether they're broiler chickens. And then all of them have to be properly euthanized and disposed of properly. Most of the time, we don't have means to burn, say, 5 million laying hens, like the situation up in Iowa that arose yesterday. So most of the time, those are euthanized in small groups with CO2 and then properly buried somewhere on the farm as close as possible so that they don't have to carry them very far.
We can and will chat over time, talk a little bit more about the economics of the situation, but what's the bottom line that maybe people, consumers, even producers might need to understand about how avian influenza is spread, or maybe about the culture itself?
The biggest thing people need to realize is how many viruses are there. According to a microbiologist at Penn State who was involved with the outbreak in 2006, in a 1 gram positive sample of manure from a wild waterfowl, which is about the size of a dime, they counted over 1 million flu viruses that have the potential to infect other birds.
I talked with Chet Utterback earlier in the day. He is the poultry research farm manager here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. That last tidbit is important because of two reasons. One, there is always a lot of avian flu available in many different types of viruses that come from wild waterfowl. Two, for the backyard producer of poultry, their flocks are in greater danger maybe than those that are on farms because there's much better biosecurity there. It means that if you go up, for instance, on the north end of Prospect Avenue and you're where the Canadian geese might be, you might not want to wear those shoes and even clothes into the backyard with your chickens because, well, it's a good way to transfer the avian flu to them. Unlikely that it will transfer to you. CDC said so this morning in its USDA press briefing. I listened to that, and we'll try to bring more of that to you tomorrow. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. On this Wednesday, let's check very quickly at this hour what's been happening in the cash grain market. Alex Reed is with us from the Andersons, Logansport, Indiana facility. That's the Clymers ethanol plant. Tell me about prices there and basis, please.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me, Todd. Clymers right now, we moved our basis. We're priced over the July futures now. So we're at option price of July, so our current cash price would be about $3.79. And beans currently, we would be at 978.
And basis expected to strengthen or weaken?
Basis has continued to strengthen here nearby, just trying to get more corn moving. The market hasn't been helping with farmer sales.
Alex Reed, he's at the Andersons facility. That is in Logansport, Indiana. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated.
It's National Jelly Bean Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1763, Jared Elliott died. Elliott was an American colonial clergyman and agronomist who wrote essays upon field husbandry, a tome about reducing inefficiency and waste in colonial farming methods. He also invented a drill which would open a furrow, plant seed, and drop manure in a single operation. In 1778, James Hargreaves died. He was the English inventor of the spinning jenny, the first practical application of multiple spinning of raw cotton by a machine. In 1832, Julius Sterling Morton was born. He was the founder of Arbor Day, first observed in Nebraska on April 10, 1872. In 1889, the U.S. opened Oklahoma to homesteaders. And the Oklahoma land rush officially began at 12 o'clock noon. In 1913, Thomas Wright of New Jersey patented a method to load ice onto refrigerator railroad cars. In 1945, Robert Elmer Horton died. Horton was an American hydraulic engineer whose studies on rainfall drainage established a basis for the analysis of soil erosion and soil conservation. 1 month before he died, Horton published a 95-page landmark paper that summarized two decades of study on rainfall drainage. And in 1970, the first Earth Day was celebrated, and that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated. Let's discuss the weather forecast as it relates to cool temperatures over the next several days. I saw some frost in the numbers for us locally. How widespread might these events be, at least in terms of temperatures in that low 30s area?
Well, I think it's going to be really quite widespread from southern Iowa all the way into northern Ohio over the next couple of mornings. We'll take a little bit of a break from the coolest conditions and then turn right around and bring it back one more time, perhaps, as we get into the second half of next week. That one is still up for debate as to how significant it'll be. It's all up to an upper-level low that's going to be dropping through the eastern United States during the middle and latter parts of next week. But, you know, just one of those perfect examples of even though we're not happy with the fact we're not out there in the fields, what if we had gotten started a little bit earlier? It might have been a little different situation here for this week. So maybe a little blessing in disguise.
Okay, so the other item I need to take up with you, in particular for the northern Corn Belt, Minnesota, parts of Iowa, where they raise a lot of turkeys and poultry, and they've had a problem, as we all know, with H5N2 or the avian flu. Like other influenzas, this goes away with heat. So how warm might they get and when?
It's not going to warm up very significantly right away. The majority of the region will see a warming trend, but I think we need to get temperatures pretty significantly warm before we can really make a big case for improvement. So my guess is that we'll probably have to wait until sometime mid-May for a notable increase in temperatures that might be sustainable. And even then, I think we may end up coming back into some more cool weather again towards the end of May and 1st of June. It won't be as cold as this, though. It will be below average once again.
Until the Mississippi Flyway stays cool, the Canadian geese continue to migrate slowly, I suppose, and that's going to be a problem. Other areas that we need to check in on, your assessment of the winter wheat crop after the rainfall that has recently come through?
Certainly has been a big turnaround for a lot of crops out there. We do have low subsoil moisture still, and they do need to see a significant addition to the moisture profile that they've improved upon up to this point. There's another two-storm system slated for that area as we go forward through the coming week. The first will occur later tomorrow and into Friday. We'll look for that one to be a light rain producer and focused on central parts of the plains more so than the south. And then there'll be a second system that will come along as we get into the end of the weekend, into the, we'll say Sunday and Monday. During that time period, we might do a little better job in fixing some of the moisture deficits that remain in parts of the Texas Panhandle and southwest Kansas. Although for right now, we're still debating how significant that may be because of this next storm system will be a cutoff low, and it may kind of wander around however it wants. We're not quite sure what that is going to be quite yet.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and helps us wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Tuck Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.